better days, a little respite. The witch's eyes flash, eyes blacker than night fly off a bone-white face and zoom up closer. To hover there before them, she sees them. Her hands before her face are claws, but her eyes before their eyes are wide. "See me, do you?" hisses the necromant, nearly as old as they. "Help me, will you? I need no meddling from geriatric powers such as you. What you had in store for me I have endured with no entreaty. And now you have pity? Please understand if I'm not impressed. Why now? Save it for yourselves. Throw a dog a bone, a necromant a bit of grace. And how? Please, no more help from you. You've already done your worst to me. Better have mercy. But fates don't, do they? You're here with too little, too late," spits the witch, elbows up, forearms crossed before an eyeless face, while those untethered orbs of hers black and huge dart from fate to fate to fate. Then swoop away at last, to return to her countenance and rest within her shadowed cowl. Get away. Go away. Leave me be. The fates get back and back, startled, insulted. Few see them. Fewer still upbraid them. But this old soul is nearly fearless, and the fates recall then what it means to have nothing left to lose. Then it's time to spin away and go away among the men and women, some with short lives, some with long. So many hearts here, for creatures locked away from tears and laughter, to see. So many souls here, not crying, content to wait to be released. On this beach, in firelight, there is soft wind and warm night. Fates have no world of weather. They are far beyond the gods and day and night, but only spin and spindle and know. And say who will die and who will live to fight on other days. They see a man who can be a dog or horse, a mage who is white of heart and slight of stature. He stands beside a goddess in black armor, and she beside a true and balanced soul. This fighter makes them swoop and peer and look into hazel eyes to see how nature has concocted such a one. He feels something, a breath, a touch of veil upon his cheek, and brushes at his eyes. Almost he sees them. Almost the mage beside him does. Now the goddess looks, and looks, and looks the other way, taking her beloved by the arm, saying, "Nico, come this way. Let's watch the waves. And Randall, come with us. This way." Almost, one irked fate reaches out to remind this goddess, so bold, so brave, of humility, and who holds sway among the powers of creation. But the other fates have their say, and reason its day. The Ascalonian abomination is gone, because this fighter risked his life. This mage has helped make the seventh sphere clean and new and safe for all spirits. dreams are freed. There is nothing to affront the heavens now in this place, except the ancient weapon in the Froth daughter's care. And it will go another way and be lost to men as it always should be, and can be, and will be soon enough to please even these three fates, who used it to bring down an enemy of mortal and immortal, a scourge of all the worlds of man. The Froth daughter has looked into the eyes of all three fates, and her soul has told them so. This weapon beneath the sea will go, never to be seen by men again. She has promised. They believe her, and spin their wool to make it so. Thus all will be as it should be once more, above and below. So their dispensation has come to its close. Twice they have sojourned, where fates usually cannot come to dwell or visit, among the mortal and the damned and the divine. And now they are content. The haughty have been brought low, so they slip away and swirl away and whirl away into their own timeless realm, content to go where fates are meant to go, a realm they only could have left, to come here once and once again, to be here on this special night when worlds align and destiny takes its time, because mortal souls have called them, called out to heaven and beyond, once and once again. So they leave here, leave the life and death here, and go their special way, content with what fates have done and what life will come to these, whom they had caught up in their hands on days gone by and tested. Those who are here, left behind where sun and moon still shine, are full of grace, the survivors of this awful purge, when the mighty were brought low and the grasping lost their grip, are pleasing in the sight of fates. And so, with their leave-taking, they give a gift to those alive who labored unknowing in their cause. Joy and honor and glory for all who endure to fight on other days. Now place and plane shift in their courses, and day and night align, and all things that are in heaven are on earth, in just and right proportion.
"What are we doing, Nico?"
Randall wants to know.
"Shh," says Nico. "You'll see."
He has the ghost horse, its reins in his hands, and he and Randall are sneaking through the shadows at the edge of the celebration, beyond which Crit and Stratton wait, obedient to the Riddler's orders.
"She's here. I just need to..."
"There," Nico says. Randall nearly bolts. Nico grabs his arm.
"She won't hurt you. You know that."
"But why is she here in the darkness and not with everyone?"
"Where would you be if you were she?" "Hold this horse."
Nico walks up to Ishard, where she hovers in the shadows.
"Ishard, come join us. You're welcome here. I brought Stratton's bay horse for you to ride. The commander wants to thank you publicly for your service to the band."
"Publicly?"
comes a scathing voice from within that cowl.
"Critias suspects me of all manner of crimes to which I would never sink, and says so publicly. And after all I've done for you..."
"All stepsons know how much you've done for us. How many lives you saved. Tempest knows." You're to be a guest of honor. Please come, he said, and tried his slowest smile, which had melted women's hearts from here to there and back again. Please, he held out his hand. Strat's waiting. I'll help you mount. I'll lead you both to him. He'll lead you through the commendation. Then this horse wants a ride, just you and Strat and him. So much. All powers rejoice when a noble animal is happy. Give the horse his ride, just you and Strat. Tonight's a night for counting up the living, for rejoicing. Who knows how many more nights like this we'll have, with all of us together. Randall said,
Stealth, I never heard you talk so sweetly. Why don't you treat me like that?
His eyes, still on the necromant, who could drain his life in a second, Nico muttered in return,
Because, Randall, you don't need so much help.
And then louder,
See, Randall's here, and welcome here, and he's a mage. The Riddler wants you to ride up so he can commend you personally, in front of everyone, with Stratton, on the horse. Please don't make me fail because you won't come with me.
Then out she came, floating. This necromant needed no horse and no help, but Tempus was right to send Nico on this ticklish mission. Strat couldn't have convinced her. Her hold on Stratton was too great. Ishad took the hand Nico offered, put her slim fingers in his own as if she were a queen, and let him help her onto the big bay ghost horse. He arranged her inky cloak over the ghost horse's croup, over the spot on its hip where nothingness could be seen if the light was just right. Then he said to Randall, I'll lead the horse. You get Strat. Nico blew out a deep breath. Tempest never asked the easy things. Ishard could jump on him right now from behind, and he wouldn't be able to fight her off. It might take her just a little longer to finish him than it would the average soul. He didn't think his blessings from the goddess could protect him from a soul-sucking necromant, the feared vampire woman from Shambles Cross who didn't bother sipping blood, but drained the very life force from her prey. Then Stratton came up, Critias fuming alongside.
I'll take them, Nico,
Stratton said. Nico relinquished the bay's reins. Crit put his hands on his hips and damned them all to hell and back as Stratton led Ishard, her black cowl still pulled down over her eyes, to the line of honorees, filing up to the Riddler, where he was awarding commendations before the gathered crowd. Stratton had freshly dressed wounds and scabby burns, as did nearly all the fighters in the commendation line. Critias stared after his partner, leading the witch on the ghost horse. The sea wind gusted in Crit's fine-featured face, blowing dark hair around an angry look. Beyond and out to sea, thunder grumbles, lightning flickers, but harmony and chorus both have promised that there'll be no storm tonight. And Nico believes them.
You think this is smart, Stealth? Critias asked him scathingly.
Crit had asked Nico that same question back in Lemuria, in front of the bullpen before this sanctuary expedition began. It seemed so long ago, when the Riddler lay abed sorely wounded, before the Theban goddess appeared on the jetty. Before the ancient remedy gone awry, before the fighting with Sham in his rest place and at the Mage Guild, before the goddess healed him, before the fire at the barracks, before the confrontation with Ascalon on the second Chironian battle plain.
before they'd lost Dion and Ari and Epony and Zetos and too many others. So much had happened to all of them. "I think it is fitting, Fox," Nico replied very softly. "I think it's what our commander ordered. I think you're lucky to still have a partner, and you should kiss the hem of her cowl if she helped to make it so."
"Stealth," Critias said. "You can kiss my pommel."
Nico sighed. "Critias, you and I need to make peace. I'm just doing what the Riddler tells me, all the time. You're better than I am at so many things. Please, just let me do my job and help me do it, and I'll help you do yours."
"That necromant
loves your partner, as do you. If she wanted to kill him or eat him or whatever she does, she's had chance after chance. Let them have their time. He'll come back to you. He always does." Crit grunted, but he seemed somehow less angry. Nico stopped trying to fix what might not need to be fixed or might not be fixable. He stepped into the dusk to watch Stratton lead the ghost horse and the necromant up to be commended. Torches flickered, being lit. The Riddler was all anyone could ask tonight. Massive strength, magnanimity and command, sure in everything he did and said. "Now," Tempest told the assembly, "I want you all to meet two homegrown heroes. Sanctuary's own, the youngest of our band and as magnificent in battle as any of us. First, there's Hawk, called Artem, right-side partner of Lysis and son of Illyra. Illyra has graced us with her presence tonight." Everyone craned their necks to see the teary-eyed Illyra at the front of the crowd. "Hawk and Lysis, come join us." They had built a low podium, and on it Tempest stood in uniform. Lysis and Sink helped Artan, hobbling, pale but healing, up to meet the Riddler, one on either side to steady the wounded youth. Nico saw Harmony in her black armor beside the reviewing stand, on Tempest's far side, watching. The commander told Illyra in his battlefield voice, "Illyra, your son Artan saved the life of his Theban partner here, took arrows meant for Lysis, and this sacred band pair fought a valiant fight against more than 10 times their number and emerged victorious. We're lucky to have them, and you, Illyra, on our side." Tempest handed boxed commendations and service medals to Artan and Lysis as the audience clapped and cheered, and Sink led the two away. "Next we have a stepson many of you have heard about. Giscarus, Sanctuary's own son of Vashanka." Sacred banders thumped their shields as Chorus let Sink escort him before Tempest. "Chorus distinguished himself in battle, fought off 12 enemies, with all the ferocity of the god in him. Shoulder to shoulder with our Theban brother, Charon. If you would, come up here and give Chorus his service medal and receive your own." Chorus accepted his commendation with an aplomb that suggested to one and all that he was merely receiving his due. Then Sink escorted those two away to thunderous cheers begun by Molin Torchholder and his palace oligarchs,
who swarmed around Corus as soon as his feet were on the sand. "And now," Tempest said, alone, again on the stand, "we are especially honored to present one of Sanctuary's most esteemed powers, and a special guest of the band, who has saved countless lives over battles too numerous to recount here, accompanied by one of our finest officers. Please welcome Ishard of Shambles Cross, Ace called Stratton, and his most valorous warhorse of the Sacred Band." Stratton lifted Ishard off the ghost horse and down, and her cowl fell back as the big stepson helped the tiny necromant up onto the stage. The crowd gasped. Nico saw Harmony's head tilt, and the goddess drew back one step, two, then held her ground. "Ishard, this commendation is long overdue. For a decade or more, you have helped the stepson leadership unselfishly, whenever you were asked," Tempest said. "When we have faced infernal battle where sorcery was arrayed against us, you never once hesitated or faltered. Among the heroes here today, you are the largest in stature. In this battle, not only did you help plan and execute a winning strategy, but you went among our wounded and dead upon that most daunting of battle plains and helped rescue all you could. For service such as yours, there is no adequate reward. But please accept our tokens of esteem, our honors, and our everlasting gratitude." The Riddler handed Stratton a service medal hanging from a loop of ribbon. Stratton put the ribbon over Ishard's head. The tiny necromant blinked through owlish eyes at the crowd. People clapped cautiously. Stratton resumed his position beside Ishard. Tempest continued. "Many of you know Stratton, my valued tactical officer, who commanded the stepson contingent here in days gone by. Stratton was grievously wounded in this fighting, and Ishard's skills were critical to his recovery. Among the heroes of the Sacred Band, none has served more bravely, or performed more superbly, or led more critical missions. If you wonder what a stepson is or why we esteem them so highly, look at Stratton and see the answer. Here, Strat, is our highest honor, won not once but 100 times in service to our forces." Tempest went to stand in front of Stratton and pinned a gold feather to the shoulder of his mantle, then stepped back. Nico saw Critias near the dais, blinking fast. "And now, for our most singular award of the evening, presented to our most unique combatant." Tempest reached down and got the special commendation that Nico, Sink, and Lysis had prepared. A garland of sugar beets and carrots. Then Tempest stepped off the podium and draped the garland over the ghost horse's withers. "No one has saved more lives than this horse, fought more battles, faced more foes. We thank Ishard and Stratton,
and the horse himself, for his valorous service. And each of you, for joining us here to celebrate these heroes, one and all. Life to you, everyone, and everlasting glory.
The ghost horse reached around and pulled off a carrot, and everyone cheered and clapped, and fighters thumped their sword hilts on their shields. At that signal, the musician struck up the martial air Nico had heard the last time they'd feasted here. Rat, tat-a-tat. Tat-rat, tat-a-tat-a-tat. Brum-rum-pa-bum-bum. Brum-rum-pa-bum-bum. Tat, rat-a-tat. Brum-rum-pa-bum-bum. All the guests line up to watch as the marching song begins with flutes and drums. Now at measured pace, fighters from Tempest's unified command, those who fought the Dream Lord's hordes on the second Kyrenian battle plain, troop slowly out from behind the lighthouse on foot. Across the sand in double files they come, carrying empty litters from the far side of the lighthouse, each toward his designated bonfire. This time, following the foot soldiers with their litters representing the missing and the slain, cavalry marches toward the firelight from the shadows. The hair stands up on Nico's arms. To see these men and horses come across the sand by sixes. As the Riddler has ordered him, he falls in on foot when they come abreast, walking beside the leftmost horse and rider. He's so close he can touch the nearest, hear their timeless sounds above the music. Squeak of armor, creak of leather, metal jingling, horses snorting, hoof beats, so many, pounding the ground like Nico's heart against his ribs. He paces the leading rank as they pass before the crowd. Row after row of mounted stepsons, Thebans and Third Commando come together to parade past their commander in review. The band's fighters know this ceremony for what it is, the aftermath of victory. Bittersweet and full of honor for the living, glory for the dead, a harbinger of struggles yet to come, new beginnings. Greater destinies await. Born of these greater dooms they'd just surmounted, with the Riddler guiding them, driving them through their fears to feats yet unimagined. The honor guard rides with somber eyes, faces set, taciturn, fit to fight wherever their commander bids. Tonight, once and forever, their differences are subsumed into the greater sacred band, cadre honor superseding all. It's as if Nico is walking into his own future alongside this cavalry as dusk fades to dark and the flames burn high, endless ranks, grim men on tall horses, bound by love and honor to duty and to one another. No illusions, no dreams of sack or pillage, wealth or conquest. Not now. Not ever. Stepsons and Thebans, Third Commando, thrown together, melded by strife in the crucible of war into something stronger. Fighters clear-eyed in the face of danger, seeking a better future for them all. His commander tells him these men,
will be his some day. All these fighters of renown, wolfish and keen, and he will be ready some day. Ismat knows it. The goddess Harmony believes it. Tempest has told him so in no uncertain terms. Even now his partner honors him beyond his expectations. The black feather of justice crosses over the sword on the band's new standard. The Riddler's gift to him. The feather stands for Mott, for Harmony, for Nico's need to find a better way to fight on other days. 120 horses and riders are filing by the commander in perfect rhythm, perfect time. Soon there will be 250 more, Tempest says. Tat, rat-a-tat, tat-rat-tat-a-tat-a-tat, rum-rum-pa-pum-pum. All wear uniforms of gray, green, and brown linen, leather and wool. The fighters farthest left and right have mail shirts, sparkling in the torchlight. These riders hold aloft their new standards, pennants of the greater sacred band of stepsons, snapping in the breeze. Shields of wicker or wood faced with leather and bronze carry the same unit device. Mantles billow in the sea breeze and horses' manes and tails are flowing. Out of respect for the fighters being honored tonight, every bit of metal and leather gleams on each man and horse. The commander, too, has dressed for the occasion, but in the new uniform, not in leopard skin. The band is praising, not warring, today. When Nico reaches Tempest's position, his commander salutes him. He stops there, as arranged, while the cavalry rides on. Nico's throat closes up. He wants to go to his partner, but Tempest is with Jihan, and the cavalry horses are in between. The Theban goddess is nowhere to be seen. Tat, rat-a-tat, tat-rat-tat-a-tat-a-tat, brum-rum-pa-pum-pum, brum-rum-pa-pum-pum. Alone on this sweet summer evening with the moon bright in a sky aglitter with stars, he gives thanks for all he's done and all he's become. Inside him, his mat is no longer restless. Justice has been served, and will be served. He has his equilibrium, and if he finds his path solitary sometimes, then so be it. He has his rest place back again with its star-shaped meadow. No threat or shadow lurks there, anywhere. Then she's there beside him on the beach, his luminous goddess wrapped in night, wearing her black armor, her soft hair afloat on the breeze, bringing the smell of his meadow with her to mingle with the gusts coming in off the wine-dark sea. They watch the rest of the march together, silent, while the music plays, as the horses and men pass by and on into the dark. And then it is done. The last rank passes by them. The music crescendos and stops. In the sudden silence, the surf crashes upon the shore. Nico is so conscious of her standing beside him that his skin tingles all the way down his right side. He leans in toward her, she leans toward him. His arm goes round her, and putting his hand on her armored hip, is the most natural thing in the world. The breeze blows her soft hair over the back of his hand against his naked arm. Will he ever know what to say to her? "Thank you," he says, watching her as she watches the horses, disappearing behind the lighthouse. "For everything. I wouldn't be here to see this if not for you." "Your mare misses you. She's here. You should make time for her." The goddess shifts and her left hip brushes his right. "Come this way," she says. So they walk that way, with his arm still around her, through the celebrants, past Charon and Gorgias and Aegis and Archias, past the young Theban poet Perses and his grizzled partner Simmias, and all the Thebans bow their heads before her. They pass by Molin Torchholder, talking earnestly to Chorus. Chorus looks to Nico for rescue from the clutches of the priest and his oligarchs, all clustered in a festooned heap, like presents waiting to be unwrapped. But Nico won't help Chorus tonight. Shawmy and Marikat prowl nearby, giggling with girlish glee behind their hands and switching their hips at the boy who is the storm god's son. Nico knows young girls. They'll extricate Chorus from his plight presently. He's never been with Harmony in so public a situation. So many stares make his skin flush hot. Or being so close to her does it. Sanctuarites and soldiers gawk, unabashed, as they go by, until Nico stares them down and makes them drop their eyes. A goddess setting foot on earth is too remarkable by half. She shifts her shoulder into him as they walk. "Don't mind them. They want to see you as much as they want to see me. Smile. Wave if you know them. Just keep moving." They're heading toward the lighthouse, behind which the mounts are kept, until she leads him astray into the dunes. "Here," she says, "between two sand dunes crested with grass," and sits in a hollow there. He sits in the sand beside her, and she comes against him. She fits effortlessly under his arm. Even through armor, she sets him ablaze. The wind teases him with her hair. He's sure nothing can happen here and now between them, on a night like this, in a place like this, dressed like this. But she is a goddess, and his doubt melts away with the touch of her hand. Their gear is strewn on the sand, but it doesn't matter. All is consonance around her, and grace. Nothing untoward can happen when he's in her arms. Even here, she brings the meadow. He smells it. He feels it. He sees his rest place in her eyes. The sand is softer, cooler than he expects. And she yields to him, this time, as she has not done before. And speaks his name in a voice so melodious that his heart trips and skips a beat. Her lips on his are soft as the sea breeze, and there is only this moment, in all of creation, with her silken hair and her long limbs entwining him. Somehow he's not afraid they'll be discovered here. She has a way of bringing everything into balance. Her touch is so cool on his heat and her body so perfect for his that nature herself will surely protect their privacy. When he can see the moon over the grass of the dunes, she lies with her head on his arm, her hair across his chest and trailing down his ribs, and says, None could ask for more, beloved, than we have here tonight. Don't you agree? When I'm with you, I want it never to end, he says, his voice too husky. His words too brash, he fears. He kisses her forehead. Her skin is fine, soft. Then it will not end, she says, shifting onto one elbow in the sand while the stars send light to gild her limbs. Since that is your wish, we will have many nights like this. And the nearby sea breathes for him, because looking at her lying in the sand makes him hold his breath. I don't want to lose you, he dares. I need you to know that. If I die in battle, shh. Her finger touches his lips. You died. Now you live again. You will never be lost to me. I'm trying to understand. I'm not sure what all this means. You give so much to me. How do I thank you? How can I? It means we go this way together, she says, and kisses him once again. As you have chosen, it is what we both want. No thanks are needed. Tempest has taught him that all things are reflected in all things. Tonight his rest place and his destiny are reflected in her eyes. He must stop asking questions with no answers, stop wondering at his good fortune and follow his heart. Believe, as he always has, in himself, in his bright purpose, in his mot. He can't bring himself to ask what she has done to him. He keeps trying, and he can't say the words. It is too forward. She might misunderstand. But in his heart, he knows. He'd sliced his arm, cleaning his short sword. The cut healed as he watched. So in some way, is he like Tempest now? Never to age, but still vulnerable? For how long? What was the difference? Risk is risk, life is life. Meet it quailing, meet it bravely, but meet it you will. Pain still hurts, dogs still bite. He isn't dependent on her, doesn't want to be. She's not like Enlil inside Tempest. She comes and goes as she pleases. He needs to stop holding back with her. What she sees in him is what he is, not what he wishes he might be. His body knows just what to do with her. Whether Harmony can do all she says or will, whether he lives forever or just this one more night, right now, he is immortal in her arms and more balanced than he's ever been, except when he looks down from the heights to which her caresses lift him. So he touches her once more. Music starts to play, its strains wafting round them, and everything is new again, as it always is with this goddess who has him by the heart. Eventually, they dress and find the horses, and his mare is there. Her sable head turns to him. She sights in on him with her ears and presses her head against his chest. She nickers and he scratches her neck. And Harmony says, "She will have a great foal for us." For us. He doesn't doubt her word. When man and mare have had their reunion, he walks with the goddess back toward the music and the dancing, where bonfires burn high and flames lick the sky. And he says once more, "Please, accept my thanks for all the blessings you've given me." And he wants to say more this time, so he does. "Stay with me tonight, all night long. And she says, of course, as if that was all he'd ever had to do, just ask. So he walks her toward the feast boards, keeping himself between her and any who might wish to intercept her. It was easy. It was what he did. It was what he knew. He could protect her person from intrusion now and forever. It's nothing compared to what she's done for him, but it is his pleasure. He wants to give her something. The commendations included small golden feathers on pins, field decorations from the battle. He gives her his. He says, it's nothing much, but I want you to have it. It's my medal from the fighting. She takes it gravely. It is wonderful, she says. I am honored. He brings her food. Does she eat? Tonight she will, and is fascinated by every move she makes when she does the simple things that mortals do. She takes a bit of bread, a drop of oil, a little wine, and throws them on the flames. There is no richer man on earth tonight than he, with Harmony by his side. Jihan and Tempest find them soon after, and Tempest makes the introductions. The two most beautiful women here weigh one another with calculating eyes, then bare their teeth and touch hands. And there is no thunderclap, no lightning bolt from heaven when they touch. The two laugh softly, each more beautiful than a mortal woman can be, each with triumph and exhilaration and proud, wide eyes. Tat, rat-a-tat, tat-rat-tat-a-tat-a-tat. Jian says, Tempest is going to teach me how to dance tonight. Nico sees that kill smile tugging at the corners of his commander's mouth on this soft, warm night in which everything is finally right. The Riddler's eyes implore him to do something, but Nico doesn't know in this odd moment, with dancing and music all around, what Tempest requires of him. He wishes he could stop time, make the world stay here forever, where he has all his loved ones around him, and his wounded on the mend, and there is no dying or crying or bleeding, but only music and dancing and beauty and joy. Dancing with the Riddler, Jihan? What could be more sublime? Asks Harmony. Then the goddess beams at Nico. The meadow of his rest place is still in her eyes. We could help Jihan, Nico. Show her how we dance. Then Nico realizes what the Riddler wants. His commander, whom he has followed into so many battles and who now needs him on his right for a sortie into a different sort of combat. Of course. Jihan, just watch us. Harmony? He took his goddess in his arms, her hand on her waist, and they spun together across the sand. And when Nico looked up, he saw Tempest and Jihan doing the same, dancing in the moonlight with the sea at their backs and the stars twinkling down on the waves. Tempest, with Jihan clasped close to him, watches his partner in the moonlight with the Theban goddess, and all his stepsons laughing and eating and drinking and dancing. And he sees how life might be with Harmony among them, with all this simple good that this goddess of the balance brings to Nico, to the band, to everything she touches, this goddess of love in war, helping to steer all things through all things. At first he'd feared this change she brought, despite all he was, all he knew, all he taught. For he too is different now, with harmony among them. It is not only Nico who is changed, but all of them. How Tempest feels, where he goes, what he wants now. So much more seems possible tonight than ever before. Change, like war, is constant. He'd always known it. But disappointment and loneliness had long fought on his right hand, and the habit of suspicion had grown deep into his bones after so many years, so many wars, serving the storm gods of the armies, facing the worst that gods and men can do, and never blinking. This warrior goddess has brought a softer hand, sounded a more compassionate note, and her Thebans are with his sacred band to stay, bringing all their love and happiness among his fighters. First he'd thought it might make them weak. Now he saw it made them stronger. And loneliness among men and gods, the greatest curse of all, which makes so many climb too high and fall, was kept in balance now. All things were in proportion. Wanting neither too much to live nor too much to die, he and his had accomplished more than he'd thought men could do. To gods, all things are good and just. But the Dreamlord had been neither. His reign so far beyond the rules that men or gods obey. And Tempest's greatest vulnerability, this soul called Nicodemus, who made him feel too much and want too much and want to protect too much, was at last strong enough for all the trials ahead, with time enough to learn all that Tempest had to teach him. So if he could not step twice into the same river, he could at least try to keep Nico from making so many mistakes that he had made. Eternity would be the better for having Nicodemus in it, and the entire world remade in a better order once the power that was Nico came of age. Thanks to the Theban goddess, Tempest finally had the weapon he needed in Nicodemus, over whom so many powers contended for so long. Use him wisely. Few have been given such a weapon by the gods or fates before. And so he would. The fates had come here tonight. He had seen them. Gian had. And Ashad had seen something. And the goddess, he suspected, had seen them too. The fates had come and looked again and gone another way. They had struck down none of his. They hadn't cut a thread or ended a life. He'd had a moment when his own life had passed before his eyes as he realized what he faced there in those black robes. So much striving, so many days and nights, so much love and death. Since he was still alive, and all of his were alive, he had to assume that opposition had brought concord once again. They had done a favor for eternity at great cost. He had only seen the fates once before, even in so long a life as his. But he saw destiny when he looked over Jehan's coppery head at his stepsons, at Nico, who might be more than ever Tempus had hoped, at Stratton and Critias, and at his new blood, Lysis and Arton and Chorus, with so much striving stretched out before them. The sun is new every day. He wanted to get his horse and have Nico get his and ride through the surf in the moonlight. So when he could, he got Nico, and they did that, just the two of them, while the celebration wound on and the dancers danced and the musicians played. With Nico on his right, they rode through the splash of the surf, he upon his Tros horse who had served him so well these many years, and Nico on the black stallion who had come from the goddess, not talking, just riding together, their horses cantering slowly, synchronized as if they rode in formation into battle. And then Jehan came up on Tempus's left side, riding her grey froth-horse, farther and farther out into the surf. She waved at him, and he knew she was going back to the sea with the weapon she'd promised to take there for him. He waved in return, and a breaker covered sprite and horse. Then the froth daughter and her froth horse were gone. In a blink. In two blinks. He knew she'd come to him again if he stepped into the ocean and called, but some day he needed to teach her how to say farewell. The world was always a little smaller after Jehan had left it. Above his head he heard wings beat and looked up. He called softly, "Nico, above you." And Nico looked up too. Two winged shadows wheeled on high, masters of the air, dark against the luminous vault of heaven, lazing on the currents aloft, pacing them. Nico caught his eye. "Ishard and Randall up there. Look how beautiful they are." And they were, safe and free, the necromant and the warrior mage wheeling high above them in the night, watching everything ahead of them from far-seeing eyes. Next, the goddess Harmony joined them on Nico's right astride her sable mare, and up beside her, to her right, came Critias on his chestnut with Stratton mounted on the ghost horse to his right. Now they were five across, Tempus with his Tros in the surf and the best of his sacred band of stepsons beside him. This first rank of his could lead a charge into heaven itself, or into hell, and never falter, never fail. He felt grace and gratitude at that moment as he had never felt them before. Now more stepsons come riding, his sacred band, forming a second rank behind, left to right. Chorus on the blue roan, then Sink on his bay, Charon on the big dun, Lysis on Nico's black colt, and Arton weak, but riding proudly, head high, astride his brown gelding. And behind them, from right to left, came Gale and Cassander, then Gorgias next to him, and then Perses and Simmias fell in alongside. When they had almost passed the lighthouse, Nico craned his neck and called out softly, "Commander, Tempus, they're still with us." In his ear, so softly, above the sounds of the horses and the surf, he thought he heard the